We're talking about museum outreach, accessibility, and lessons learned about visitor traffic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Madison Children's Museum has been on this journey, rethinking its low-cost memberships and whether they're really creating inclusiveness. And there's this data analytics firm that focuses on the nonprofit world is called Impacts, and it released numbers last year on museum challenges. It found 4 in 10 people in the U.S. don't feel welcome in an art museum, and offering a free admission day, not a fix. Do you ever struggle to participate in events or visit museums or experience art because of the cost? Are there other barriers? We're at 800-642-1234. Sandra Bonici is Associate Director of Education, Diversity, and Inclusion at the Madison Children's Museum. She's also one of 10 fellows that the American Alliance of Museums has tasked with helping 50 institutions build inclusive cultures that reflect the communities they serve. Sandra, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
So explain how your museum created this access program for people. What is the goal of opening up the museum?
Well, our Access for Everyone umbrella is a huge iceberg, if you want to think of it that way. And the tip of the iceberg are these admission prices. Our free nights, which are every Wednesday, the first Wednesday of every month, we're free and open from 5 to 8 p.m. And we have dollar admissions and low-cost memberships, subsidized school field trips. So those are like the very visible pieces. But underneath all of that is this commitment to really co-creating and listening to our full community in order to make those programs truly accessible. Because like you said, it's not enough to just have a free day or low cost admission price. You really have to think about those other barriers to participation. And the biggest one is I don't see myself reflected and respected in an institution. And that is a big challenge for museums. And I think another one really is this: if you are accessing a public space or an institution or a cultural institution, and there's a fee involved and there are low cost things, the ability to be able to access those kinds of programs that are designed to help people remove financial barriers in and of itself has a challenge in that you are asking people to report their poverty. And at the end of the day, if we're trying to get people into the door and feel welcome and included, and we have something that really is not an asset-based strategy, we are complex personal identities. We don't define ourselves by one particular thing, and particularly not our deficits. So if we're constantly asking families to report what kinds of aid programs or, you know, how low income are you, and particularly in front of your children, that doesn't really incentivize people to come in. And it doesn't really kind of start the visit off with a great sense of welcome.
So if I understand this, you removed that proof of showing your income as part of gaining access to a low-cost or free membership?
Exactly. So we have a really broad array of qualifying agencies or programs that you can belong to, such as Birth to Three or the Quest Card, which is the state food stamp program. So any type of public assistance. Plus, we've expanded it to include agencies like Head Start. Uh-huh. YWCA, MMSDs, Play and Learn, and then also if a family has a child with an IEP. So,
which is
an individualized education plan. Okay. So oftentimes a family may have a child that has a need of some sort that they have an IEP for. They may not qualify for these other programs, but there's still significant costs that the family is bearing that might be a little higher than a family that doesn't have a child with a need in that way. So we have this broad array of qualifiers. And in the past, in order to gain, to get the membership, you would have to show proof that you belong to those. And that in and of itself was the biggest barrier to people using it, because what we do know in deep conversations with communities and with Head Starts and families that helped create those those membership programs in the first place is that no one wants to come in and get singled out. Mm. People are afraid that they're going to be treated differently or looked down upon. And that's not at all the intent, or certainly not the way we think about creating welcoming and inclusive spaces.
We're talking with Sandra Benici. She's Associate Director of Education, Diversity, and Inclusion at the Madison Children's Museum. We're looking at access. We're looking at memberships. Your thoughts on this, 800-642-1234. Did you ever qualify for a discount? Perhaps you were a student or you have a young child, but then the requirements to provide proof were too difficult. What can you tell us about that experience? We're at 800-642-1234. So, Sandra, it's been 4 years now since you changed this policy. What do the numbers look like? What's happened?
Well, we saw an increase in the numbers of memberships, which was exactly what we wanted to see. What we didn't see, and what I think some of this standard practice of thinking is that perhaps we'd see a drop off in our other membership levels, which we didn't. And what we saw even more so was an increase in the usage of the memberships. So families were coming more often under their memberships than they were before. So we know that if you are qualifying for some type of assistance, that the challenge of getting to the museum and having time is the most precious resource for everybody, and that it's even more challenging for any family on any type of assistance. So what we're seeing is that those families were making the effort to come back again and again more often than they had done previously. So there was an increase in membership usage.
Oh, and there is a cost to getting to a museum.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have to really factor in the cost of just getting there and being able to have that time off from work or factoring it into schedules.
And parking and all those other things. You know, there is a lot of wraparound to what that visit is. We always say the visit doesn't begin the moment someone steps in the door. It likely has started either the night before or even the week before, planning it out. You know, if anyone who's had small children, trying to get everyone into a car or onto public transportation, getting where you need to go, it's a bit of a journey.
I understand that this policy, this access for everyone, is perhaps a bit more unique, not true at many museums around the country. How has it been received by your colleagues?
Well, a whole different array of responses to it. Many people fear this concept, what I call a myth of abuse of the program. The people who don't really qualify for these qualifying programs are going to be using the free thing. And my response to that is, if someone is coming through our door and wants to be in our spaces, I think that's a good problem to have. You know, if we're looking at trying to be essential to our communities, having our full communities be in and a part of our organization is absolutely critical. I think a lot of people were wondering how it would work out. And I think there is that business case, right? Are you going to see a drop off in your regular admissions, which is a part of the revenue that institutions need to raise? And that didn't happen, which is great. And in our access membership, we have a sliding scale. It starts at 15, but families can choose to pay more. And what we've also seen is that families are choosing to pay a little more if they can. So that was something that was a little unexpected. And then also, because we are a nonprofit and all these programs cost a lot of money and we have to raise that money, we were able to make the case to larger donors. And what we received in this past year was a larger amount of donations towards our Access for Everyone. It doesn't get us across the finish line, but we saw more money coming in the door to support these programs.
Talking with Sandra Benici, focused on education, diversity, and inclusion in museum offerings at the Madison Children's Museum. Your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the museum world and efforts to make it more inclusive, bringing in people from all walks of life. It's a conversation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Museums across the country are working to diversify audiences in an inclusive way, aligning around terms like you've heard, equity, diversity, inclusion. And one case study on how you do this is coming out of the Madison Children's Museum as it removed barriers of proof for its low-cost memberships. Are there places like museums or galleries or theaters where you feel unwelcome? What do you think about this? If those places allowed reduced costs, do you think you'd visit? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sandra Bonici is Associate Director of Education, Diversity, and Inclusion at the Madison Children's Museum, and she stays with us for this conversation. Sandra, we were talking there about the business case and a moral case for this policy change, but looking more closely at funding, what happened there as you saw memberships go up and you also saw donations from your member base go up?
I think what you see is what I like to call co-creation. Just putting out, you know, the policy to just remove documentation wouldn't have been enough. What you really have to be, I think, as cultural institutions, at the heart of who we are and who we serve, we are places of story. And our full community's story needs to be a part of our institution. And that also includes donors and funders and members, and particularly voices that are underrepresented and under-resourced. So I think what is happening in the funding world is that funders really want to see, what are you doing to address community need? And in order to address community need, you can't be sitting in your echo chamber deciding these things. You have to actually be out co-creating and listening, deep listening with your community and having that voice centered in your policies and in your process. So I think people really want to belong to something bigger. And I think that's what programs like our Access for Everyone does. It allows everyone to be a part of something bigger. And by donating extra during our Access for Everyone campaign, if you're a member, by having our Access for Everyone programs being fundable projects that we look for support from foundations and donors and grants, I think the case that we're making, the story we're telling, is that everyone is essential in gift, and how do we make sure that gift has a centered voice in our institution so that we are essential and sustainable?
Have you heard from people who have used this Access to Everyone? What has been the reception like?
I think when we made the policy change, a lot of people said, thank you. It was a relief. It's just one more time that we didn't have to show proof, and particularly in front of your children. And I think that's just because we just live in a culture that does a lot of poverty shaming, and somehow that there's a character flaw or you're not working hard enough because you need these programs. And I think by removing it, we're saying we trust you. We trust our community, and we trust that every caregiver has at the very heart of what they want something the absolute best for their children. And if doing that in a space like a children's museum, where our mission is to connect families together through interactive and hands-on play, then I think that's living our values and really serving our mission. And I think people are feeling that.
Well, certainly access getting into the museum is one thing, and that's a piece of that job, but you have a much bigger piece, and ensuring that you're speaking and to the community through diversity and inclusion in your exhibits and, you know, even accessing the rooftop garden area.
Absolutely.
How is that?
Well, I think, again, it's that idea of the Madison Children's Museum is a deeply collaborative institution, and we work with so many different agencies and partners, and it's kind of built into our DNA. And then taking it further, every time we think that we might have heard and have been in spaces of deeply listening to our full community, there's even more voices that need to be at the table and heard. And so I think the way we think about it is, you know, if you look at all those different containers, access, diversity, equity, inclusion, access really means I know how to get to the door and through it. And those access programs help people do that. Diversity really means I see myself respected and reflected in the institution. Equity really kind of talks to systems, that there are systems in place that help me succeed despite historic exclusions. And then the ultimate goal is inclusion. And that means I have voice in the institution. The institution isn't giving me voice, but my voice is being centered and listened to within the institution. And that's for everybody, staff, board, donors, vendors, visitors. And I think that's what a true sense of belonging and inclusion really gets to.
Has that been a difficult process in terms of opening those doors and making those changes? Or do you see that your museum has been on this journey of change and a lot of people within your museum world are on board with that? How difficult is that?
It's about dismantling our biases and looking at institutional isms that really are in place. So that's a long, hard journey. It's not easy and it's not comfortable. And if you're comfortable, you may not be doing it right. So is what I always like to say. But it has been a long journey. And one of the five insights that the American Alliance of Museums has put out in their Facing Change initiative around being more diverse and equitable in cultural institutions is this idea that every individual and every institution really needs to do the hard work of unpacking implicit bias. And I think that has been really embraced by the Madison Children's Museum. We have been on a journey of working with organizations such as the YWCA to do racial justice trainings. We belong to the Cultural Competency Learning Institute through museum associations, which really also furthered that journey. But everyone in our institution has taken upon themselves to really think about their own personal journey. So the personal journey and the organizational journey go hand in hand. And what are the resources that we do to support that? And I would say that the leadership at the board and executive leadership level has been deeply supportive of that journey. And it's been bumpy. I mean, some things are hard. I mean, it wasn't an overnight decision to change that one little policy, but that's how change happens. It's everyone reflecting, who does this serve? Is this a good policy? Are conditions different than when this policy was made? And can we change it? And I think everyone's empowered in the institution to look at things like that.
We're talking with Sandra Bonici. She is Associate Director of Education, Diversity, and Inclusion at the Madison Children's Museum. We're looking at access. We're looking at so many different ways in which this museum in particular has been trying to broaden out and bring more people from the community to better reflect the community. Looking at this data last year, Sandra, 4 in 10 Americans don't feel welcome in an art museum. What's inside of that and how do you change that?
Well, I think, again, museums are places of story. And the story has been told through a dominant culture lens, right? So I think children's museums have a little easier time because we don't officially curate things. But I think institutions like art museums, you know, tell a story through a particular lens that doesn't speak to everybody's experiences. And then I think there's a little bit of that sense of elitism towards art and who, you know, what constitutes art, who defines what art is and what is beauty. And if it's only through a, you know, a white dominant culture lens, then that's leaving a lot of people out of that story. And so I think as museums are trying to change, not just who is working in the institutions, but how the exhibits and programs are reflecting a broader lens and perspective, I think that's essential. Because if we're looking at a huge culture shift in our nation, by 2040, we will be a minority-majority country. And if right now only 9% of minority populations are using cultural institutions, we're going to have a hard time keeping the doors open.
As we wrap up here, you're actually leaving the Madison Children's Museum.
I am.
Tell us where you're going and what you'll take away from this experience.
It's very, very bittersweet. My partner has accepted this amazing opportunity at Brigham and Women's in Boston. And so we are throwing in together. I'm moving out to Boston, and it's a big challenge and a big adventure. And I think also I've been at the Children's Museum for 19 years. It's hard, but I think it's also really a great opportunity to have more voices involved. So I always kind of ask myself, you know, every day I walk in, am I standing in the way of the work or am I helping it move it forward? So I think this opportunity came up and I was like, okay, I think it's time. Mm-hmm. And then also with the fellowship with AAM, there's a lot of exciting work to be done there. And so I guess we're Boston bound. And there's just a few museums in the Boston area.
Yes, a few, right. Not that many. Sandra, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Sandra Benici is Associate Director of Education, Diversity, and Inclusion at the Madison Children's Museum. Coming up, we get a preview of the 11-day Wisconsin State Fair that opens tomorrow in West Allis. What is your favorite thing to do or see at the fair? What's your favorite food? Bring it on, 800-642-1234. We'll head to the fair after this news update here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the Wisconsin State Fair here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It opens tomorrow in West Allis with nearly 60 rides, dozens of entertainment stages, thousands of animals, and then the food, fried olives, bug tacos, snake soup, and yes, the standby cream puffs, of course. What questions do you have about the Wisconsin State Fair? How has your experience been at the State Fair? Is there something you think the fair should be doing differently? Have you been in the past? Are you planning to go again this year? We're at 800-642-1234. Christy Chuckle is the Wisconsin State Fair's Public Affairs Director. Christy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we'll get to the bug tacos soon here, okay. I promise, and the snake soup. But first, let's look at some of these new attractions. I understand there will be alpacas at the fair this year.
Yes, there will. We've heard from our fairgoers and our exhibitors the past few years that they really were looking for those llamas and alpacas. So it will be a small exhibit this year, hoping to potentially expand upon it in the future, but we're excited. Alpacas haven't been at the fair for years. I can't say they've never been there, but they have not been there in a while. So we actually tore down a building where we are putting a tent. The alpacas will be in there. There'll be a couple on display, and then we'll have some alpaca products for sale as well.
So alpacas, what other animals are roaming around the fair?
Well, they started coming in last night, so today will be a big day for all of the animals to come. It's the Junior Dairy Show, the first weekend of the fair, longstanding tradition. So you'll see a lot of our junior exhibitors coming in with their dairy cattle, but we also have rabbits and poultry and goats and swine, so they'll all be moving in today, and then we've got the Clydesdales coming in as well, and I know a lot of people really look forward to that.
Oh, how can we experience the Clydesdales? Those are amazing.
Yes, we have the hit shows right away on opening night, so you can go that day. Those first couple days of the fair, we do have the Clydesdale shows in the KSIH Coliseum. If you don't get to a show, though, you can still walk through the barns and see them. And then we actually have some other draft horses back near the end of the fair. So that's when you'll have more of the Belgians and the other draft horses.
And I understand there's also artwork on display from kids and young adults living with autism.
Yes, that is another new exhibit we're very excited about this year. So it's called Autism Art and Animals. It is only there through the first weekend of the fair, so August 1st through the 4th. It's in the Exposition Center lobby, and we're working with an organization in Milwaukee called Islands of Brilliance. They have some autistic children who've made some artwork specifically for the fair, so we're excited to showcase that. Like I said, that is new. But in that same area in the Exposition Center, we have a lot of art on display. So we have our Young People's Art exhibit, which art comes in from kids throughout the state. it comes in before the fair starts, and it's judged before the fair starts. And then we put it all on display in the Exposition Center lobby. So if someone's never checked that out, I highly encourage it. We also have a Make It, Take It art area in that same kind of area where kids can make art projects and take them home.
Well, for thrill seekers, are there new rides this year? What can you tell us about the rides?
We always have a few new rides. Spin City is really something that we're so proud of. We have an independent midway, we call it. So what that really means is we don't contract with one company to bring in our midway. And a lot of fairs do that, and there are a lot of great companies out there. But we've chosen, as have a lot of the biggest fairs in the country, to kind of handpick the rides and the games that we really want to see on our midway.
Oh, this is like a la carte midway, huh?
Yes, it's a lot of work. But in the end, it really, it just gives a great experience. And like I said, if we want to not have a ride that we had one year and bring in a new one, that's really our choice. And every year, we make sure we have a couple new rides. There's a couple new kiddie rides this year that we are excited about, the tractors, as well as a new haunted house, which is kind of like a haunted fun house. So there's 50 rides and attractions down in Spin City, and then 30 games. So there's definitely a lot to do there. And you can certainly get ride all day wristbands. We still offer those for $40 when you get there. They're specific to the day. But we do encourage people, if you want to do a lot of rides, we also have ticket sheets, and you can save money by buying, big sheets of tickets. And then those tickets are valid on rides and games, and they also can be used any day. So they just offer a little bit more flexibility than those wristbands.
We're talking about the Wisconsin State Fair, which opens tomorrow in West Allis. Christy Chuckle is the fair's director of public affairs. She's our guide. You can join in. What questions do you have about the state fair? Have you attended in the past? What has been your favorite food or your favorite attractions? What's your favorite ride? Share your questions, your experiences with us at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Christy, the fair broke its attendance record last year, nearly 1,038,000 attendees. What are you looking for as numbers this year?
Well, we do say we love having 1 million people there. Don't get me wrong. We've had 1 million people come the last 6 years in a row, which is pretty amazing. But number one, we know that we're weather dependent. So, if we had 5 days of bad weather, it would be really tough for us to have 1 million people come through. So we don't really budget or necessarily measure our success solely on attendance. And not only that, but, attendance is great and we love to have all the people there, but we really want people to have a good time. We want them to enjoy their experience at the fair. And if it's too crowded, we completely understand that that makes it a little bit more difficult. So we're always trying to find that balance of, having a lot of people there and getting as many people as we can in the gates to enjoy the fair, but also making sure that there's, it's just not too crowded for you to get food that you want, see the exhibits that you want, use the restrooms, of course, is always a big thing at these big events. So we budget to have between 850 and 1 million people come through. And, if we don't hit 1 million, that doesn't necessarily mean we won't have a successful fair.
So do you have any tips for us for avoiding long lines?
Sure. Buy things early. First of all, we still have tickets online, wistatefair.com. The admission tickets are not discounted at this time, so those you can wait and buy them at the gate. But through today, you can still buy those Spin City tickets at a discount. You can actually get cream puff vouchers. You can get a discount on those as well.
Cream puff vouchers.
Yes, they're for the six-pack, so you get a pretty good deal if you buy it ahead of time. So some of those things can save you, if you're in Spin City, especially if you already have that voucher, you go to a different place to exchange your tickets. And then it's just one less line you need to wait in. You can buy those tickets ahead of time and you can get them sent to your email, print at home, or your mobile phone so that you don't have to wait in the line to buy the tickets at the gate. But you still will have to wait in the line to enter the gate. And I just want to remind people while we're talking about gates and lines that we do have metal detectors at all of our gates, and we do check bags. And obviously that's really important just for the safety of our fairgoers. But we just ask that people be patient because that's an important process that people need to go through to get into the fair.
And in terms of getting to the fair, there's a new system for rideshare services like Uber and Lyft. What's going on there? What is the difference with that this year?
We moved it. That's the big difference. So It will look completely different. It's the other side of the fair park. And it used to be over kind of on the west side of the park, the southwest corner, which has always been our transit area, or at least for years has been. That's where all of our Milwaukee County Transit System buses come through. We've got some shuttles coming in from Waukesha County as well, so people could stop there and take a bus in. And those buses come through that Gate 4 area. But with the, you know, just the growth of Uber and Lyft and all of these rideshare services, last year we looked at that whole area and said this just is not servicing our customers the way we want. We want everyone to be safe. So we took the taxis, Uber, Lyft, et cetera, moved it to the other side of the fair park near Spin City, near the ride. So now it's on the north end. And there's a parking lot up there, but there's not all those buses and shuttles coming through. So it should be a much better experience for everyone who's taking an Uber, Lyft, or taxi. We just really want to remind people because it is a very different area of the fair park.
Yeah, can rideshare users then expect more walking from their vehicle to get to the gate than last year?
Not to the gate. It's just a different area of the park. So it depends on where you're going. You know, if you're going only to go to the exposition center, then unfortunately, yes, it would be a little bit further walk. But if you're going there to do the rides, then it's right there. And if people have been to the fair park, you know, our ride area, Spin City, is kind of that whole north end. So you will have to go through that. And then you'll get somewhat dumped out right in kind of the heart of the fair park where there's a sky glider. One of the stops is right there. It's really close to Agriculture Village and the Coliseum and the Wisconsin Products Pavilion. So you really just have to get through Spin City and then you'll be right there.
And what is the approach? You mentioned metal detectors, but how does the fair approach safety in general?
Obviously, it's really our top priority. Everything we do, everything we program in terms of where we're locating things, we think about the safety of our fairgoers. In terms of metal detectors, we've had them for several years now. Obviously, you know, this is becoming more and more common at large events. So if you go to a Brewers game or a Bucks game or a Badger game, you know, anywhere you go, events like this, I mean, we have sometimes more than 100,000 people coming through those gates in one day. And we just really want to do everything that we can to keep people safe. Checking bags, we started even before we put the metal detectors in. We do allow large bags. A lot of venues don't anymore. You know, some of them you can only take in a small purse. But we feel with our audience, we understand there are so many families who come to the Wisconsin State Fair, lots of small children.
Lots of diapers. Yeah.
Yes. We know you might need those diaper bags or those backpacks, even if your kids aren't in diapers anymore, but they still need some things. So we encourage you to bring it in, but we will check it at the gate.
We're talking with Christy Chuckle. She's with the Wisconsin State Fair Public Affairs Director. Let's get the lowdown on food. 800-642-1234. What do you think about those cream puffs? Let's talk in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're getting set for the Wisconsin State Fair here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Gate opens at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in West Allis for the 11-day run. It is the 168th fair, if you're counting, and cream puffs have been served since the early 1920s. So which begs the question, what food do you have a long tradition of eating at the State Fair? Why do you love it? What do you think of that famous cream puff or weird food offerings? What's the craziest thing you've eaten at a state fair? Confess. Bring it on. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Christy Chuckle is the fair's public affairs director, and she stays with us. All right, Christy. So food. What new food seems to be generating a lot of buzz this year?
Well, you did mention the bugs. So we had the the last few years, it's a vendor. Actually, they're out of Appleton, All Things Jerky and Exotic Meat Grill. They're a great vendor of ours, and every year they come up with a new bug concoction. So last year it was the ants on a stick, which people actually liked a lot. A lot of people said they did. This year they do have the bug tacos, which include crickets and worms, and they also have a couple other items with grasshoppers, and then they sell the bugs with their, you know, just in bags at their stand, but they also have some really great beef jerky. I personally like the beef jerky.
Yeah, what have you sampled among the bug array menu?
The only thing I did try this year was the grasshopper slushy on a stick, which is basically a grasshopper popsicle. I didn't get a whole lot of grasshopper, I'm not going to lie, so I was fine with it.
Could you see the grasshopper in the popsicle?
Yes, yes. You can see the grasshopper in the popsicle. It's a lighter colored yellowish popsicle. So yeah, you can see the grasshoppers and their little legs. So if that's your thing, you know, they're high in protein. They're very healthy. Apparently bugs are the new trend. But we have a lot of other foods that do not have bugs in them. And I've noticed a lot of, there's 67 new foods, so you can find that list online, wistatefair.com. I won't rattle them all off, but there's a lot of spicy things this year, a lot of tacos, and some phenomenal sounding desserts, which I really haven't tried any of those yet, but I'm going to get started tomorrow like everyone else.
Well, I can rattle some stuff off here. Brownie waffle stick from Waffle Chicks.
Yeah.
A brownie waffle. That sounds somewhat
delicious.
Delicious, breakfasty, yet, you know, some dessert in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then jalapeno popper hot dog. What do we know there?
Well, it's at one of our stands. They have all of those interesting hot dogs. So they basically took that idea of a jalapeno popper with the cheese and the jalapenos deep fried and made it into a hot dog. So like I said, I haven't tried it yet, but I have a lot of work to do starting tomorrow, like everyone else, to try all these new foods. And a couple of the ones that you've mentioned are part of our Sporkies, which is our food competition. That's something we started 7 years ago. It's really taken off. Our vendors are encouraged. They have to submit their items very early on in early spring, and then they get judged internally, and we whittle it down to 8 finalists. And then those finalists compete on the Wednesday during the fair for, you know, to be crowned the grand champion of the Sporkies.
It must be pretty high stakes because this food is really creative, and yet it still has to be delicious.
Exactly. So it's judged on just what you said. It not only has to be creative, but it also needs to taste good. So there's several different criteria. We have a panel of celebrity judges. It is pretty intense up there. It's a lot of fun, though. And honestly, all of them end up being delicious. So it's really tough to choose. But anyone who gets, you know, one of those top 3 trophies, they're pretty excited about it.
But, you know, when you think of fair food, you definitely think of fried food or something on a stick. Are there healthy options out there at the fair?
There definitely are. I encourage people to go on our website, wistatefair.com, whether you're on a computer or mobile, and use our food finder. So if you're looking for a salad, other people have asked me this question. So if I type in salad, you know, you get like 12 different salads that we have at the fair. We have a list up there that we call group gluten friendly. So we know there are a lot of people who don't eat gluten right now. And, you know, it's not necessarily guaranteed to have zero trace of gluten. So we just always want to warn people, and they should, of course, talk to the vendors about it if they do have a food allergy. But that list too, because, you know, there's no carbs really, or very few carbs on a lot of those items. You know, there's some healthy options there. We do have a lot of grilled chicken, grilled, you know, we have seafood at the fair. We do have vegetables. We have smoothie stands all over. So there's definitely
there are options.
You can get some healthy choices.
Talking with Christy Chuckle, she is with the Wisconsin State Fair, which opens tomorrow in West Allis. What questions do you have about the State Fair and how you navigate it? Join in at 800-642-1234. Christy, if you're on a tight budget, what are some of the ways that you can save money at the fair and perhaps get free admission?
We have several admission deals. The first one is tomorrow, opening day. So it's Wells Fargo $2 Day, which benefits Hunger Task Force in Milwaukee. It's not free, but it's only $2. So if you bring in two non-perishable food items, and this goes till 4 p.m., you can get into the fair for just $2. That's one of our best admission deals that we have at the gate. We also have a deal on Monday with Kohl's, Kohl's Family Value Day, another fairly long-standing tradition at the fair now where adults get in for $6 and kids get in 11 and under, everyone's free. So if you're coming with a family, Monday is a great day to come. On the last Sunday is Miller High Life Veterans and Military Day. We've been doing that for years as well. Veterans and military and up to four family members get in for free that day. So definitely take advantage of that. We also have an awesome presentation at the Associated Bank Amphitheater, a tribute to veterans and military. The parade that day is very veterans military focused. We do have the parade every single day of the fair, though. It kicks off at 2 p.m. So again, that's just a fun thing for families to do. And then just a couple other ways to save money. I had mentioned it earlier, but you can get discounted Spin City ride tickets online right now. If you buy them in sheets at the fair, you also get a discount versus individually purchased. We have souvenir cups that you can purchase, and then you get discounted refills throughout the fair park. We have bargain books you can buy there. So the bargain books are only $5, and they have 90 different coupons in there for food vendors and also shopping vendors.
Well, it doesn't look like there's much of a chance of rain in the forecast, but if you need a break from the heat, what are some good options at the fair?
Well, we have a lot of buildings at the fair, so we're fortunate in that we have the Exposition Center, which is 200,000 square feet. That's where almost a lot of people love to go and shop, hundreds of stands in there, and that is air-conditioned. The Grand Champion Hall, where we have all of our horticulture, craft, and culinary exhibits, is also a nice, cool place that's air-conditioned. It's a little bit older building, but it's still a great place to get out of the heat. The Wisconsin Products Pavilion is air-conditioned, so it's certainly a good place as well. And then you've got all of the barns, all of the tents, so even if you just need a little shade, there are a lot of places to get in the shade. We also have misters, so we put them out if we need them, and they'll be scattered throughout the fair park. And then we just encourage people to drink water. Of course, you can bring in unopened water bottles. We're fine with that. Like I said, your bags will get checked at the gate, but if you've got water bottles in there that aren't open, that's fine.
Christy Chuckle, will you get any sleep for the next 11 days?
Not tonight, but after tonight, it gets better. I'll probably be there pretty late. We have TV stations going live in the morning, right? You know, they'll be live at 5 a.m. So that's always fun, though. We have so much adrenaline. We've been working literally for an entire year to plan this 11 days. So we can get by on a little sleep those first couple days, and then we usually crash a little bit.
What is your favorite thing about the Wisconsin State Fair? Is there one place you go or one thing you absolutely love?
It's tough for me to pinpoint. I feel like every day it's different. You know, I love that we have new things every year, but I really do love the traditions of the fair. I always go down the giant slide with my kids, and they're still young enough that they love that. And you know what? Adults love it too. So let's be honest. The giant slide is so much fun. I, as an employee of the fair, like I said, we work so hard year round to plan this 11 days. And some people ask what we do all year, but it takes a lot of planning. And, you know, just opening day, I'm there very early. So I get to see, you know, when I get there at 3:30 in the morning and all the exhibitors are walking around getting ready for the show already. And then,
oh, we know about 3:30. Christy, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Christy Chuckle is the Wisconsin State Fair's Public Affairs Director, and we should also mention that the State Fair is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, we look at access to traditional Native foods and federal food programs and how to keep food harvested by tribes in the local economy. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.